Hello, hello.
I'm Savannah.
And I'm Alicia.
And this is Burden of Proof.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Part two.
It's part two. Can you believe how far into March we are?
No, I cannot.
That's crazy.
You did the crispy R.
It's crazy. You crazy girl.
No crispy R's. All right.
Graham cracker. My name is Courtney. Kardashian. Courtney's my least favorite Kardashian.
Ooh. Isn't Courtney everyone's least favorite Kardashian?
No, she has some diehards.
Well, I could see that.
Do you know who my favorite Kardashian is?
Yeah.
It's Kim.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You know who my favorite Kardashian is?
None of them.
None of them. No, but years ago when they first came out, I would have said Khloe.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Khloe's the most, like, normal, grounded.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they all started getting weirder and weirder, and I was like, nope.
I can't help but love them.
I'm out. I think I watched, like, two seasons.
But it'd be me.
I'm good.
Kim, there are people dying. My earring!
Oh, my God. I don't know what to say about that. That'll be something I talk about on my new podcast.
Alicia keeps hinting at this secret project she may or may not be working on.
I'm not sure.
She hasn't decided.
We'll see.
Should screen it with the patrons first.
Maybe I should.
We have like an automatic focus group.
Yeah. Maybe I'll do that. We'll see what you think. All right. Well, I don't think we have any specific business to speak of.
No, we're recording this so far in advance. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what we'll be doing.
So sorry, probably folks. Nothing. We have had to record a little extra early because I need a break from this reality. Probably heard us mention it in the past four episodes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. So the next episode that we record, I'll give an update.
Yeah.
On, you know,
her Oregon trip.
Her trip to Portlandia.
Portlandia.
Yes. All right. So we're just going to jump right in. Are you ready?
I am. I have to be honest with you. I have told so many people in my life about part one of this case. It really stuck with me. And, you know, we cover a lot of cases and sometimes they can, you know, be in one ear and out the other because of how quickly we turn them around. But this one is not like that. It has really,
yeah,
thought about it a lot over the last few days, like the last few weeks. So
are you telling me you gave away spoilers?
Yes.
Well, okay. But only to your friends and family.
Yes. Only to, I think, yeah.
You're not like putting it out there on TikTok.
No. No, 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 no. Only to people in my IRL, in real life.
Gotcha.
I told Savannah about it. I told Nicholas about it.
Well, Savannah doesn't listen.
No.
Anyway, because.
But Dina does.
Dina does. Sorry, Dina. Sorry for the spoilers.
I don't think that it got spoiled for her.
Well, in part one, we left off in late 1983 to early 1984 when Bobby was a serial rapist known as the classified ad rapist across South Florida.
I mean, I don't. Yeah.
Any questions? Any refreshers? I mean, I'm assuming you remember.
I do remember. I don't need any refreshers. I do have questions, but none of them you can answer.
Okay.
Such as, how dare he?
Yeah.
And can we castrate him?
It's a little late for that at this point.
Well, does he get castrated? You can probably answer that.
No.
Well, worth a shot.
According to one of my sources, he admitted in his confession, that is to come, that one of his victims reported the rape and he was nearly caught. So instead of stopping and getting some help, he made the conscious decision to end their lives from that point on. However, do you remember his, I guess you'd call it maybe his MO as the classified ad rapist, like the scenario that he would do?
Refresh our memories.
Okay, so as the classified ad rapist, He was known for answering classified ads that are often selling like furniture or something that would require him to go there to see it, to the house.
Right. And our worst nightmares.
Yeah. He would specifically target women that were either single or home alone during the day. Like he'd be like, oh, well, I can come during the day. Right. And then he would go to their homes, rape them, take off. So, unfortunately, several of the murder victims, the victims to come, were picked up on a strip in the Tampa area known for prostitution.
That's why they call it Trampa.
I've never heard that.
Oh, I'm so surprised. How long have we been friends? You've never heard me call it Trampa. That's crazy. Yeah. Yes, for this reason and also for the sex trafficking, unfortunately. Yes.
That I knew is horrible. Well, that's horrible in all of Florida, yes. But Tampa is a hot spot.
Tampa is a hot spot. But yeah, we call it Trampa.
So I'm letting you know that up front because, like I said in the beginning, I want to focus on the victims as much as possible. Right. But because of this fact, there's not always a lot of details reported about who these women actually were, you know, as human beings.
Right.
This is the 1980s. It wasn't viewed as trafficking. Right. It was just, you're a prostitute.
Right.
So it's unfortunate, but that's, yes.
You should do a mini-sode about your time working with and what you learned.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's as common knowledge as it should be.
Oh, it's definitely not.
Because I didn't know. I mean, I knew a little bit, but I've learned so much from you. And
yeah, a lot of people think that sex trafficking just happens like you get kidnapped.
Yeah.
Or that only women from that I met that were in the program would have people after the fact, like when they hear their story, they'd be like, what? You're American. Like, they think that it only happens that only women from other countries are taken and forced into sex trafficking.
I don't want to make this about Gen Z, but I really want to make a Vine reference right now.
Okay.
Yo, lesbian, I thought you were American. Yep, that's where I'm at right now.
Fair. So, yeah, maybe someday we can do that. All right, so here we go.
All right, see.
In March of 1984, a young sex worker by the name of Artis Wick went missing. She was violently raped and strangled. Now, she is not listed in all of my sources. And even the ones that do mention her, there's not a lot of details. So I'm inclined to believe that they may just be attributing her to him because it matched the rest of his murders. So I don't know, but I felt I needed to at least mention her, even though I don't have, I literally have no details on her about where she came from or who she was as a person. But I wanted to say the name. About a month later, maybe less, on April 5th, 1984, Bobby was arrested after attempting to abduct a woman from a shopping center by asking her for a ride. He charmed her with talk of her vintage Jaguar and once in the car pulled a gun on her. The woman wrecked the car in order to escape Bobby, and he was later found that night, arrested, charged with aggravated assault, and was eventually sentenced to 3 years probation and ordered to pay $1,500 in restitution.
Lovely. I mean, just such a, you know, an even match for the crime committed.
Yeah.
Can you hear my eye roll?
Did that scare Bobby straight?
I think not.
No, of course not. In May of 1984, Lana Long, and I'm just going to say this, that was her English name. This is not her given name. I don't know how to pronounce her given name, and most of the media calls her Lana Long. But I wanted to acknowledge that that was not her given name. Lana was a college student who was a former dancer at a local strip club in Tampa that Bobby frequented. She was walking down Nebraska Avenue when Bobby stopped to offer her a ride. She accepted, and after a short drive, Bobby pulled a knife on her. Lana fought back, so he tied her up and drove to a more secluded area where he raped and strangled her. Her body was found nude, face down, with her hands bound behind her back on May 13, 1984, under an interstate overpass.
Okay.
Attacks quickly escalated after that, with the next one taking place sometime on May 26th or 27th. It was believed that 22-year-old Michelle Sims had just arrived in Tampa with friends. It's not reported as to how Bobby lured her to his car, but Michelle did have a record as a sex worker in the past.
Okay.
Once in his car, Bobby violently beat and raped Michelle and then slashed her throat. Escalation. Mm-hmm. Michelle's body was found nude, face down, and bound under an I-4 overpass near Plant City.
Okay. I know where that is.
Detectives were able to connect Lana and Michelle's murders when forensic investigators found the same red nylon fibers on both of their bodies.
Right.
From the Magnum.
Magnum, the car.
The car. She has to be very specific.
The car.
If you listened to part one.
If you didn't listen to part one, you should.
What are you doing?
What are you doing here? Go back.
Go listen to part one.
Come on.
On June 24th, the badly decomposing body of 22-year-old Elizabeth Loudenbach was discovered in an orange grove near Brandon, Florida. She was last seen on June 8th, walking just outside of her neighborhood. Elizabeth was different than his other few victims in that she had no history as a sex worker, but lived in a mobile home park near the Nebraska Avenue Strip, where Bobby had previously picked up women. She also was different in that she was found lying on her back and fully clothed.
Oh, that is different.
The only clue as to how she could have ended up with Bobby was that she was known for being a bit of a loner, walking most places she went, and often reading a book, unaware of her surroundings.
Okay.
So they didn't know if she was taken forcefully or if he lured her.
Right.
Then things were strangely quiet for a couple of months after that. Perhaps he had to focus on working more to pay that restitution, or because the sheriff's department called a press conference and announced that they had found connections between the Lana Long and Michelle Sims mm-hmm. cases. Cindy, Bobby's ex-wife, said in an interview that she and her children had been in regular contact with him throughout all of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And after the potential serial killer announcement was released in the news, she recalls a specific conversation with him where she casually mentioned it to him and said, quote, "You're always telling us that we need to be careful, and look, it's happening right at your front door." To which he replied, quote, "That's why I tell you girls you can never be too careful. You never know."
It's horrific.
Is that not eerie, though?
Oh. Yeah.
Just, ew.
I mean, it just, you can't trust anyone. Horrible.
Then on September 7th, 1984, Vicki Elliott was nowhere to be found after failing to arrive for her overnight shift at the Ramada Inn coffee shop.
Okay.
That was a mouthful.
Niche job.
A neighbor said that she had asked them for a ride, but by the time they got to her place to pick her up, she was gone. Friends told police that she worked that shift because it paid 40 cents more per hour and the tips were better.
Okay.
Can you hear me rolling my eyes?
Yep.
I have mixed feelings about that. Yes, I suppose staying up all night, you should get paid. I'm not staying up all night unless I get paid more. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, that's fine. I understand. But it's sad that she couldn't make a proper amount of money
mm-hmm.
at the regular time of day. So she had to dangerously walk to work at night in a not so great place.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the friends also reported that she had recently been carrying scissors with her because she'd been getting harassed by men driving past her as she walked to work. Hence why she asked for a ride, but I'm assuming she left her apartment because she probably thought, well, I don't know if they're going to show up, like if they were running a little bit late or something, and yeah. She figured it's going to take me that long to walk there.
Right.
The friends informed them that she changed her path that she walked because of the harassment from drivers. So she began walking down a line of railroad tracks that were secluded instead.
Oh, it's just so ominously creepy, especially knowing why we're here, you know?
Yes. The next victim was 18-year-old Chanel Williams, who was last seen standing on Nebraska Avenue Strip on September 30th. It was reported that Chanel had moved to Tampa from Winter Haven after telling her parents she was living with friends, but did in fact have a record as a sex worker. Her naked body was found on October 7th on the side of a road in Pasco County. The cause of death was a gunshot wound to the head and neck.
Okay, that's different.
I don't want to say it, but I want to say it because it's so ick.
Okay.
You know how disgusted we were when we could tell that he was like nicer to Lisa McVeigh because of her dad? Mm-hmm. And then he told her, oh, well, tell your dad he's the reason. Yeah, well, this is just as ick, because Chanel was his only black victim.
Again, I ask, can we castrate him?
And so, while I have no proof
that we all know
that's the reason for that, I find it ick that the only victim that you shot instead of strangling. I mean, on one hand...
Oh, that's so horrible. Don't think about it. I mean, but we need to think about it. And that's the thing, is it's a horrible reality, especially for women of color, is that they're so much more likely to be assaulted and killed.
Yeah.
I
just feel like there has to be something. Like, what is it exactly, psychologically speaking?
I know what it is. Strangling your victim
is so personal, close
and personal
and intimate.
Yeah.
And yes. That's what I was thinking too. So it sounds terrible, but to be shot in the head is probably, based on like graphic descriptions that I've heard about being shot in general, especially shot like the Heather Grossman story.
Right.
She survived because it hit her in the spine.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't even feel it. She wasn't in pain. So I feel like on one hand, being shot in the head, is it probably a quicker, less painful death than being strangled?
We can hope. That's all we can hope.
Yes.
You know?
But on the other hand, you know that psychologically, that was probably the reason for it. It's less personal. It's less intimate.
Right. I mean, it just adds another layer to his heinousness of who he is as a person.
Agreed.
But I'm glad that you acknowledged it, by the way.
I thought about not, but I just can't.
No,
I just can't.
We have to. We have to. I mean, we would. Yeah.
I just feel like I can't because I did notice it. And for any of our listeners that are people of color, I have no doubt that they would notice it.
Right.
That if they don't notice it, because obviously I'm not. Like, I could go through that and not ever say what race or ethnicity anybody is, but as soon as you look it up, as soon as we post pictures of the victims,
right,
whatever, you're gonna notice it.
I mean, I think it's important for us to acknowledge for a million reasons, but especially when we work in such a delicate field as true crime, where tons of minorities are regularly targeted. It's important for us to acknowledge it, even if that wasn't what happened here, even if she wasn't targeted because she's a black woman.
No.
He was targeting women. I still feel like it's important to acknowledge when stuff like this happens, because I just feel like we have to, especially when we notice it. I think you're right on that front.
So, ick.
Ick.
Big ick. All right. The next victim was 28-year-old Karen Dinn's friend.
Okay.
She was last seen in the same area on Nebraska Avenue around 3 a.m. on October 14th, 1984. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't recall, Bobby's birthday is October 14th. It was his 31st birthday.
Oh my gosh. And he's so young.
Happy birthday, Bobby.
I hate it. I hate him.
Ugh. Karen's strangled and partially nude body was found just 7 hours later in an orange grove northeast of Tampa. Originally from St. Petersburg, Florida, Karen's family reported that she had been suffering from drug addiction. Investigators found red fibers on Karen and confirmed they were the same as those found on Lana Long and Michelle Sims. So,
can I ask a question?
Yes.
Had they increased police patrol of Nebraska Street? Because
I don't know, but they did get the FBI involved, okay. Which I'll get to.
Okay.
So.
Well, and they may not have necessarily known that they were taken off of Nebraska Street. They just knew that's where they were seen last.
Yeah. And.
But still, they should have if they didn't. I can't imagine that they didn't.
I can't imagine that they didn't, but at the same time.
I can.
Yes. Yeah. You can and you can't. And then you can.
And then you can't.
And then you
can't. And then you can't because this is true crime and you can't and you can't.
So on October 16th, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department held another press conference letting the public know they were concerned of a pattern and have connected at least three of the recent murders to the same person.
Yep.
Bobby's next victim was taken sometime around then in mid-October. Kimberly Hopps, a 21-year-old known sex worker, was last seen on the strip with a group of women. It was reported that she had started hanging out on Nebraska Avenue in September, but there's sadly nothing reported about her history.
Okay.
Like where she's from,
right.
Etc. Her body was found on Halloween of 1984 near a quiet stretch of Route 301 north of Tampa.
Oh, can you imagine finding a body on Halloween?
I can't imagine finding a body ever.
True story. True story. I just like, can you just imagine it being like Halloween? Oh, so creepy.
Again, just ever. On Halloween, though, I think the freaky part would be that you would question it. You'd be like, is it really?
Really? Yeah.
Is it really a dead body or somebody playing a prank?
Well, and it would just, I would just be like, is this the upside down? Am I in the Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
Spooky.
Well, I'm sure you're not going to be shocked to hear that Kimberly, too, had been raped and strangled.
Unfortunately, I'm not shocked.
Yeah. 18-year-old Virginia Johnson was the next victim to disappear from the Nebraska Avenue Strip sometime in late October. She had a record for public intoxication and drug abuse, but it's not reported whether she was a sex worker. Reports only state that she, like, frequented the area and specifically frequented a nearby strip club called the Sly Fox Lounge. Now, as we discussed in part one, Lisa McVeigh was abducted on November 3rd.
Yes.
Okay, so this is where I have some overlap of things because everything's happening so fast.
I was just about to say, like, this is all really close together.
Yeah, from March to November. That's it.
It's crazy. Crazy.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
So, Virginia's remains were found 3 days after Lisa McVeigh was abducted.
Okay.
That would put us at November 6th. And she was discovered by two women on a horse farm in a horse pasture in Pasco County. Notice I said remains.
Yeah, I was trying to. Whoa.
Because if you think about the timeline, so like she went missing late October, mid to late October.
Yeah. Even
she wasn't discovered until November 6th.
It's still hot in Florida.
It's still warm. And she's in the middle of a pasture.
Yeah, it's hot. I wouldn't even say warm. It's hot in Florida in late October and November.
Yeah.
Like you sweating on Halloween.
Unfortunately, she was not identified until later in November when her friends finally reported her missing. After Bobby let Lisa McVeigh go on November 4th, instead of laying low, 6 days later, on November 10th, 21-year-old Kim Swan disappeared. Much like Lana Long, she had been a dancer at a local strip club, but had recently decided to make some changes in her life for the sake of her infant son. Kim had just moved back to her parents' home and enrolled in a medical technician program. She was last seen at the Bamboo Lounge, a bar in a shopping plaza near her parents' neighborhood. The next day, Kim's body was found nude, face down, and bound, like the earlier victims, in a grassy area under an interstate overpass. She, too, had been strangled. I can't help but wonder if he knew her, like he had seen her as a dancer.
Because it's just...
But he had also just taken Lisa McVeigh.
Who wasn't. So
I don't know if he just branched out or if...
I think it's because he's devolving a little bit here. Like, his pattern with Lisa changed. He let Lisa go.
Yes.
His pattern with picking her out changed, you know, and everything has happened so fast.
Yes. November 14th. It's announced that the sheriff's department had been working with the FBI on these cases, and they had put together a task force, and a team of police officers were staking out the North Tampa area, like you said. Mm-hmm. The thing is, they're not just monitoring it. At this point, they also have the descriptions that Lisa McVeigh had given them.
Yes. So and the car so specific.
What they didn't announce in that press release was that they had red fibers that were also found on Lisa.
Oh, good.
She had red fibers on her panties or clothing, her pantaloons, if you will.
Okay, I will.
Okay. Very good. So now they know.
Right.
They know who they're looking for. Pretty much.
Yeah.
They don't have a name.
They have a profile, though.
Like, they have a profile. They have the car.
Give it to Spencer Reed. Give him 20 minutes.
They knew they were looking for a red Dodge Magnum. And thanks to Lisa's amazing skills at retracing the route she thought they took just before he let her go, they actually even found the ATM.
Oh, that's good.
Cross-referencing the customers who used the ATM that day, with a list of Dodge Magnum owners in the area, they were able to narrow it down.
Ah, oh, so good.
To dun, 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 Robert Joe Long. But they didn't immediately, like, go to his house or apartment.
Well, there has to be some strategy here.
There definitely was.
He's a dangerous man.
On November 15th, an officer on patrol notices a red Dodge Magnum matching the description. It's spotted around 10 a.m., so they stopped it under the pretense of an armed robbery that had just occurred nearby.
Oh, my goodness.
The officer confirmed his ID and registration, but Bobby is let go, but placed under continuous surveillance. While they worked on getting a search warrant for both his car and apartment.
I've got my eye on you. Always watching, Wazowski.
Exactly. So, meanwhile, somewhere in there, like I said, the timeline is everything's happening so fast or all at the same time. So they got the confirmation that the red fibers on Lisa's panties were a match, in fact. the search comes through, the warrant, sorry, the warrant comes through. They search his apartment, which also turned up evidence linking him to several of the crimes, including Lisa's abduction. Because if you recall, she put her fingerprints everywhere. He was arrested that same afternoon while leaving a movie theater and charged with abduction and sexual battery of Lisa McVeigh.
I want to know what movie he saw.
I know, right?
Like,
probably what? Something pervy.
Yeah.
Or something stupid like Sharknado.
He looks like he would watch Sharknado.
I mean, Sharknado wasn't around back then, but but still, something like that. I don't know. Anyway, Bobby cooperated with detectives, signed a Miranda waiver, and gave a full confession to the crimes committed against Lisa.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
But in what they believe was an attempt to save face, he tries to play it off like he knew he was going to get caught. He says that he knew he'd likely get caught because he could tell she was able to see out of the blindfold.
Yeah, I mean, I knew. I'm not dumb. Like, I knew.
But he let it happen because she seemed like a nice girl.
Because out of the kindness of my heart, after brutally assaulting and raping this girl, you know.
Yeah.
Out of the kindness of my soul, I knew that, you know, she seemed nice.
Yeah.
I don't exactly know why I've given him this voice, but it's working for me.
Yes. So once they had his confession for the crimes against Lisa, one of the detectives stepped out of the room to collect photos of the murder victims. When he returned, he asked Bobby if he had ever picked up prostitutes in the area, to which Bobby responded, "I would prefer not to answer that."
So, yes. That's one of those questions that's just like, you can't not answer it. Like, because if you don't answer, we know you're the answering. Answer. Yeah, you can't. Like, that's not.
Yeah.
That's so, like, it's like the. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's okay.
I don't have any. I had something, but it's not the same, even okay. In the slightest.
Okay. So they showed him the photos of the deceased women, and Bobby supposedly said, quote, "The complexion of things have sure changed since you came back into the room. I think I might need an attorney." Okay.
Okay. I'm just shocked by his use of the word complexion. That's not what that.
Yeah.
You're wrong, but okay.
So, despite the statement, the detectives proceeded with the interrogation.
Well, he didn't ask for an attorney, is what they're going to say.
Yep. And because he had signed the waiver, and they claimed that his use of "I think I might" was not a definitive request for one.
I don't know how that's going to hold up in court.
This would, of course, become a point of defense during his trial and in his appeals. So.
Right. I mean.
But it didn't take long from what I can tell. I wish to God that I had found the actual tape of his confession.
Yeah.
I did not. But from what bit of the confession that portion was like played out in court documents, it didn't take much for them to try. It was like that's all he said.
They asked like four questions.
And they kept talking to him and they're like, "Get real," you know, basically. And then he just like confesses to stuff. He didn't like say again, "No, I think I might need an attorney." From what the court documents say, like he just said it the one time. And then they were like, "No, man, really.
Like, tell us.
Like, we know what you've done.
Right.
You need to tell us."
I feel like, yeah, I get what
you're
saying.
And then he just confessed. So on one hand, yes, the mention of attorney, they should have stopped despite him signing the waiver, because that was, he signed the waiver because of Lisa and he confessed to Lisa.
Right.
But he was not, then the complexion shifted.
The complexion shifted. There's now acne.
So it need, you know.
Oh, the dark circles.
I'm getting age spots. Yeah. So
there's a wart on this story.
So that becomes a bit of an issue, which we will discuss in a bit. The interrogation lasted a total of 6 hours, and Bobby confessed to 9 murders between May and November. So that's why I say that first one that I mentioned, Artis Wick, happened in March.
Right.
He did not confess to that one. I think that they just attribute it to him because...
I mean, well, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck.
It's Donald Trump.
It's Donald Trump.
I can't help myself.
I don't even remember what episode that we said that
in. I don't remember the first one that I said. In his confession, he told detectives where they would find the body of Vicki Elliott, who had not yet been discovered. And sadly, it's reported that when they did go to the place that he directed them to and found her, the pair of scissors that she carried to work on her were found near her body, or like right next to her body.
I don't like you very much.
I'm sorry.
For telling me that. I also, you know, but that's misplaced anger. I acknowledge that.
Don't take your Bobby anger out on me.
I am angry at Bobby, but...
After the interrogation, he finally had the opportunity to make a phone call. And he called Cindy.
Hello, Cindy.
His ex-wife. Cindy says she knew something was wrong right away and asked him. And he told her, quote, you know, the girls. For some reason, she thought he meant some girls hurt or killed his girlfriend, Barbara. Him and Barbara had actually broken up, but I don't think Cindy knew that at the time. Right.
But I can see why she's like, what?
So she's like, some girls hurt Barbara? Like, what are you? And he said, no, I did it. And she's like, oh my God, you killed Barbara?
I was going to say, you killed Barbara?
And he said, no, I killed the girls in Tampa. And she says she told him to stop.
Because stop talking.
Yeah. Well, no, she thought that he was joking because she says he always had a sick sense of humor. So she thought he was trying to be funny. And she's like, stop. That's not funny. Stop talking. And suddenly another voice was on the line identifying themselves as a detective with the sheriff's department and told her, he's not kidding. We have him in custody and he's being charged with multiple murders, rapes, and abduction.
What? The actual crap, do you say?
Yeah.
I am imagining being on the other end of that call. What do you say? Like, I don't know what I would even say. Like, what did she say? I don't know what she said, anything at all. Right.
Initially.
Or I would say, leave me out of it.
But like, their conversation continued because she says that he then asked her to call his parents and tell them and their children, to tell her children, that he was killed in a car accident.
It's the 90s, not the 1600s. It's going to be on the
nose. It's the 1980s.
Oh, the 1980s.
And serial killers through the 70s and 80s were just as much, if not more so, like in the news, like everywhere. Like,
this isn't gonna be a new situation. I think I figured out what I would have said. I don't know. I would be like, why are you calling me? And then he would say that, and I would say, no.
Yeah.
I mean, what did she say to him?
She, of course, said no.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, you have lost the privilege to anything. Like, you don't get a say in anything.
Yeah, she said, I'm not going to lie to my children for you. I'm not going to lie to anybody for you. So here's the kicker. Now, if you recall how horrible his mother was.
Yes.
And that a lot of psychologists believe... In fact, one expert in the court process testified that they believe that, like, in his head, he was killing his mother
over and over again.
So Cindy calls his parents to tell them. And she says that Luella, Bobby's mother, began blaming her, saying it was because she divorced him. Otherwise, this never would have happened. Ma'am.
I look like a fish.
Ma'am.
My mouth is on the floor.
I'm going to have to ask you to come back to reality. It's never anybody's, truly anybody's fault that somebody is a serial killer. But if it is anybody else's fault other than him, it's definitely not Cindy. It's you.
The abused wife, ex-wife, is not to blame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. The level of Delulu in this family, it's in their genes. Like,
oh my God.
Oh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrific. Oh, I think that would have been the last. Can you imagine? I am so, I would have wanted so to, angry. I'm I know. So angry in this I moment. Know.
To watch Cindy's interviews, you're like, no freaking way.
No,
like,
no. I don't even I'm need to sorry. See it. I don't even need to see it.
But Cindy is a treasure.
Have you ever known a Cindy that wasn't a treasure?
Actually, now that you mention it, I don't know that I have.
Right.
I think every Cindy I've ever met has been like...
delightful.
Yeah.
I am so... shocked.
Yeah. Well.
And it wasn't like Cindy called and said, it's your fault. And
no, she was being she deflected. Was just like, he's been arrested. No.
And she was like, immediately like, well, it was, oh, I'm so
and
angry.
Not only that, but how is it? They had been divorced for 4 years. Cindy was remarried at this point. She was remarried. She, it's
he
not
was her. Dating?
He. She like, didn't have to call you and inform you of nothing, and he would have probably never called you and just let you see it in the news. You're lucky she called you.
That is so infuriating.
Okay, brace yourself. We're on to the trials.
Oh my gosh.
He faced 3 separate trials.
Good. Put him through the ringer.
He was found guilty in Pasco County and sentenced to death by a unanimous jury.
You know,
for
not shocked.
The death of Virginia Johnson.
Yes.
He then made a plea agreement in Hillsborough County, pleading guilty to 8 counts of first-degree murder, 9 counts of kidnapping, 8 counts of sexual battery, including those committed against Lisa McVeigh.
Okay.
He basically agreed to be sentenced to life for every count. Of those things, except for the crimes against Michelle Sims.
Okay.
They had a separate penalty proceeding for that case.
Interesting.
I don't know exactly why, other than Michelle Sims, I believe, was the one that he also slashed her throat.
Mm-hmm.
They found the knife in his apartment.
Okay.
So they had more evidence against him on her.
Right.
So,
but you know, I was going to say, I'm glad that he accepted a plea for Lisa McVeigh so she didn't have to relive that in a courtroom.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I don't think she ever had to testify in the courtroom. So a couple of months after, Bobby moved to withdraw the plea agreement because the only defense witness was unavailable. The only expert defense witness was unavailable. And because he had misunderstood his right to appeal his confession's admissibility.
Okay.
So.
This is when I get frustrated. Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Why? I know the answer. I do know the answer. The answer is, why is he fighting it? Because you've already been sentenced. And I know why. I'm going to get there. But I just want to rant about it first.
Sure.
Can you not just stop being a garbage bag of a human being and fight this and just let it and just accept it and die or go to jail for the rest of your life?
Just accept it. Just die.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you've already been sentenced to life, to death. It's a capital case. But no, you have to selfishly so that you can stay alive a little while longer and fight this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
It's just,
I think you'll notice that I don't know for sure, but you may get the impression, as did I, that he doesn't really understand much of anything through this process.
Okay.
And that he is just doing what his counsel says, and he switches counsel. And then every time you switch counsel, your new person's like, your old person didn't do as much. I'm going to do more for you.
Right.
I think that's kind of,
which is their job.
Why this goes the way that it goes. I'm not 100%, but that's kind of the impression that I've got.
Well, that makes sense.
So you'll see that in just a second.
Well, and that's their job, and they're doing, you know, what they're doing a good job. I'm not saying anything against them.
But no, but I agree.
It's
frustrating that he didn't understand. I mean, what defense attorney is going to take this case and be like, I can fight it? You know? Right. No, they're going to be like, take this plea deal.
Right.
Period. And they're not necessarily going to push extra hard to make sure that you fully understand. I mean, yes, they're going to ask you if you understand, but.
Right.
You know?
I mean, yeah.
Even if you sit there with a confused look on your face and you, as long as you say yes, right, they're going to move on. Because what is there to fight? They have the evidence against you. You confessed. Yes, you can push back on the confession, but they also have other evidence, at least in some of the cases.
Right.
Which can be a capital case regardless that.
Right.
So they held a hearing. They granted him a hearing on that motion.
Yes.
In which he testified his defense counsel had told him they'd have an expert witness who then did not attend the hearing, the proceedings for Michelle Sims, to basically give mitigating factors. Because as we've said before, like at this point, it's not, you're not defending whether he did it or not. You're defending
should he be
put to death. So that person did not show, and he said, quote, I have no faith in anything in this now. I have no faith in my counsel. I have no faith in the doctors. I don't know what to do. Because it was a doctor that didn't show up.
I have a suggestion, but he's not going to like it. Take your foot.
He went on to testify that he had not been aware when he made the plea deal that he would be waiving all his appellate rights.
I can see how somebody wouldn't understand that.
Yeah. The judge authorized him to make a decision on whether he wished to continue the process with the previously entered plea of guilty or withdraw it and start over.
That was nice.
Yeah. He then also granted Bobby a 24-hour continuance to give him time to think about it.
That's really nice.
The next day, Bobby went back into court and elected to keep his plea deal.
Just costing us tax dollars.
The court made certain that he understood that he was giving up his right to appeal his confession, which he agreed he did.
Right. And, you know, now it's being transcribed in a courtroom.
It was.
You can't go back and say, nobody told me.
Yep.
Yes,
the judge was very clear.
And we have it in writing.
They moved forward and rescheduled the proceedings for Michelle Sims at a later date. At the sentencing hearing, the judge acknowledged four aggravating factors, including the prior conviction of the murder of Virginia Johnson, the fact that the murder was committed during a kidnapping, how heinous the murder was, and that it was premeditated. He also acknowledged two mitigating factors, including Bobby's extreme mental and emotional state, as well as his capacity to understand the weight of his conduct. Still, the judge addressed the court, stating the aggravating circumstances far outweighed the two mitigating circumstances, and, quote, the facts justifying the imposition of the death penalty are so clear and convincing that virtually no reasonable person could differ with this conclusion.
Right. I mean, say it louder for the people in the back. you're good.
Yeah. The judge then followed the jury's 11-1 recommendation and gave him a second death sentence for the murder of Michelle Sims. Then Bobby got new counsel for the appeals, and he went on to appeal the conviction for the murder of Virginia Johnson multiple times.
It's just so dumb. I mean, it's not dumb. That's the way our court system works.
Well, you're never going to believe it. He was granted two more trials for that.
You're kidding.
Nope. The first time because of the detective's choice to ignore his request for an attorney.
And I understand that.
And the second time because the prosecution made the mistake of mentioning his plea agreement in Hillsborough County during the penalty phase.
Dang. Ah, what a rookie mistake. You can't bring crap like that up.
When he appealed again, the Florida Supreme Court directed the trial judge to acquit him of Virginia's murder, despite there being fiber and hair evidence linking him to it. We've talked about it before, and I will always reiterate it. It's incredibly sad when decisions like this are made for the fact that Virginia deserved justice just as much as the other victims. Unfortunately, there comes a point where perhaps too many valuable resources have been spent to try and achieve justice when really it's just on paper. He was still sentenced to death for Michelle Sims' murder, and as much as the man probably deserved to die 1,000 deaths,
he can only kill him once. Yeah. This is Florida and you will fry.
Bobby went on to appeal his other convictions all the way to the Florida Supreme Court again, claiming the trial court erred by denying his motion to vacate the plea agreement, admitting the confession and a knife found because of the confession into the proceedings, denying his motion for a continuance, and imposing the death penalty. His argument wasn't that his plea agreement was involuntary, rather that because his confession's admissibility was in question, they should consider the plea agreement invalid.
Suck your own toe.
They, of course, said no. to overturning the convictions, citing that his plea of guilty is a confession, as well as an agreement for conviction, and it was documented that he made a well-informed decision when he agreed to the plea deal.
Yeah, he did.
Not once, but twice he did.
Twice.
However, they did acknowledge that his conviction for Virginia Johnson's murder being admitted into the penalty phase was an issue, as it had been overturned.
This is ridiculous.
So, they affirmed all his convictions and each of the sentences except the death penalty, which was remanded for a new sentencing proceeding in front of a new jury. At the second proceeding, the jury unanimously voted for the death penalty.
It's like,
so this time you didn't even get the one.
Right. This reminds me of a time that somebody that did not like me accused me of cheating on a spelling test in high school. And so the teacher said, hey, somebody said you cheated. Can you take it again in this class with no phone? Like, here, take your phone.
Yeah.
And I said, sure. And then I got a better score.
Yeah.
This is like that, but bad. I mean, depends on the way you look at it, but I just mean like.
Yeah. Bobby's final attempts at the appellate process led nowhere. His death sentence was confirmed from that point on. I believe the final call was made in 2013, and he was scheduled to be executed by lethal injection in 2019. He wasn't going to go easily, though.
He hasn't done anything easily so far.
He had a new attorney.
He has made this the most complicated situation ever.
Yeah.
For considering the fact that he admitted to all of it. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yes. His new attorney, at that time, challenged Florida's lethal injection procedure. They claimed it was unconstitutional under the Eighth Amendment because it would be cruel and unusual for him.
Oh, my goodness.
Florida's procedure was a three-step process in which the first drug administered was the anesthetic etomidate.
Okay.
Which the attorney argued had been known for inducing seizures and with Bobby having epilepsy and traumatic brain injury, would be potentially cruel should he have a reaction to it.
Nothing.
So, they requested that the Florida Department of Corrections instead use a drug called pentobarbital, which is used in other states.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that's used in other places.
The state presented expert testimony that the data shows etomidate has only been known to induce seizures in small doses, and the dose given for lethal injection is very large. Therefore, not likely to do anything but knock him out.
Right. You can't have a seizure if you're asleep. That's not true.
That's not true.
It's not true at all. But that's kind of like what they're... I mean, they're not saying it, but it's like Benadryl. You can't be allergic if you're asleep. You're not itchy. You're tired.
The court denied the motion, and Bobby Joe Long was finally executed on May 23rd, 2019, and was pronounced dead at 6:55 p.m. Several family members of the victims were in attendance, as well as Lisa McVeigh.
Good for her.
We will get to what that was like for her in a minute, but first let's talk about what happened with her after the abduction.
I would love to.
So, going back to November 4th, 1984, it was about 4:30 a.m. when Bobby left Lisa in that parking lot. She ran home, startled by every car that drove past, but made her way to her grandmother's house. She beat on the door, hoping for safety, and instead was greeted by her grandmother's boyfriend, who grabbed her by the hair, threw her to the floor, and beat her. He then interrogated her for nearly 5 hours, asking where she had been and why she would cheat on him. Yes.
I need you to keep going because I can't process that.
Her grandmother eventually called the police and told them not to worry about the missing girl. She's home now, making up stories about being kidnapped.
Please tell me the police were like, no, we're still going to come.
Yes. Thankfully, the police said they still needed to investigate. Lisa says that when she was first interviewed, shockingly, the female officer didn't believe her because she was so calm about it.
That's frustrating.
It may also have been because she was so shockingly detailed, as we said in part one. Like, she really was incredible. I don't know what the officer said, but Lisa says that at some point, she looked at her and said, no, bring in someone more intelligent.
Love it. Good. I mean, seriously, you have to be an advocate for yourself.
Yeah.
And I hate that that officer wasn't. I hate that.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. But yes, good.
So they set up an interview with Sergeant Larry Pinkerton, who was in charge of sex crimes. Lisa told Sergeant Pinkerton the same exact story. And then she said she overheard him telling the female detective, I believe her. A couple of days later, Lisa saw the news report of another woman's body being discovered, and something about it made her realize that must be the same guy that took me.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that realization hitting somebody. Sometimes you just know things.
So she called Sergeant Pinkerton and told him she needed to tell him more. During that interview, he offered the option for Lisa to be hypnotized to see if there was anything she may be blocking because of trauma. Lisa said she was willing, but because she was 17, they needed parental or guardian consent.
Can I just say that Mr. Pinkerton is a very open-minded detective?
You're definitely going to say that in a second. When her grandmother's boyfriend refused, Pinkerton thought his reaction was unusual. So he expressed as much to Lisa. Lisa started crying and ended up telling him everything that had also been going on at home. They immediately arrested the grandmother's boyfriend.
Good.
and placed Lisa in a center for runaway teens where the grandmother and the boyfriend wouldn't be able to find her.
Good.
Fortunately, before she turned 18 and would have been released from the teen center, they helped her look for family members who were willing to help her out.
Mm-hmm.
And her Aunt Carol and Uncle Charlie took her in, and according to Lisa, they were the only people who ever showed her love. I know, right?
These are real tears. I'm just trying to be quiet.
She says once safe in their home, there was no holding her back. She worked various jobs throughout the late 80s and 90s, and then in 1995, she was hired at the Hillsborough County Parks and Rec Department, where at one point, she had to report a break-in, and the sheriff's deputy who took her statement asked if she had ever considered being a cop because she definitely had the right natural skills. She said she was always interested, but had never pursued it because once she had become a mom, she didn't want to take the risk of such a dangerous job. 4 years later, she was able to take a position as a dispatcher for Hillsborough County and also become a reserve deputy. She said it was a good way to confirm that the job was a good fit for her.
Yeah.
And in 2004, after her daughter was grown, Lisa joined the police academy and eventually became a school resource officer for Hillsborough County, which she absolutely loves. She also speaks out about her story to advocate for rape survivors. She did, however, rest easier after Bobby's execution, which, as I said, she attended. She told reporters afterwards that she was looking forward to getting a full night's sleep because she hadn't had one since she first met Bobby Joe Long.
So hard.
Don't make me cry.
Don't look at me.
Don't make me cry.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean.
Would you just look at it?
Would you just look at it? Oh, well, first of all, you did an amazing job telling Lisa's story.
Thank you. I wish that I had, you know, some more details on the rest of the victims.
Right.
Unfortunately.
But
it's hard to find those details when it comes to serial murder cases, and especially when they are sex workers. I hate to say that, but
no, it's the truth. I mean, what a touching way for this to end.
I definitely enjoyed doing a serial killer case like this, like in this manner.
Right. And I mean, there's nothing left to say.
Yeah. Way to go, Lisa.
I know we said it.
I think originally you said James recommended it, but then we had patrons vote.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. So
thank you, everybody, for voting on the case, because I actually enjoyed doing this. I like survivor stories.
Yeah, you do. And you always give them justice.
A little sliver of hope in an otherwise icky realm.
Well, beautiful.
So if you've listened this far, leave us a little cop emoji.
Yes, for Lisa. Thank you guys for listening.
Yes.
Thank you for making it through two-parters in a row.
Yes, absolutely.
That's very rare for
us. Thank you.
So thank you.
We do try to avoid the two-parters now because we took a vote a while back.
Yeah.
And most of you said you prefer one episode. So we appreciate your patience so that I may take a break.
Yeah. And we will see you guys next week.
We'll see you. You'll hear us next week. I always feel
weird
saying we'll see you next week.
We'll hear you next week.
Yeah, but finally, one last thing that I feel like we're supposed to say more often, but we never do. I beg of you, if you listen on Spotify in particular, but Spotify or Apple, and you like us, please, if we deserve it,
Please,
give us a give us a rating on there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, that's like honestly one of the best ways to help us.
It is statistically with podcast and the algorithms.
Yeah.
It is all that nonsense. The best way to support us.
Yeah. So I hate asking, but I love you all.
Yeah. And if you're looking for other ways to support us, we also have a Patreon.
Yes.
We post all of our outtakes, some behind the scenes content. We have monthly live streams. So if you would to do that.
And it's just $3 a month.
It is $3 a month. It helps us get access to court information that we otherwise wouldn't be able to, as well as supports your favorite indie podcasters. That's my spiel.
Woo woo.
Woo woo.
All right. Till next time.
Till next time. Bye. Thanks for listening, guys. Find us on Instagram and TikTok at Burden of Proof Pod and email us at burdenofproofpod@gmail.com.